pronounce your name once, because I'll do an introduction later. I don't want to mess it up in any way.
Sure. It's Dara Brustein. Are we recording? Should I start giving like legitimate answers?
Yeah, let's start.
Okay.
Welcome to the Smart Brand Marketing Podcast with your host, Tom, the Digital Architect, Liebel. Are you tired of spending money on marketing efforts that produce little or no results? Unable to decide whether internet marketing is right for your business? Want to take your brand to the next level but are unsure of what steps to take next? Hey, you're not alone. Join thousands of others in their pursuit of growing a profitable business and learning actionable strategies on how they can outperform brands that are older, bigger, and stronger.
Hey, listener, another Wednesday morning here, and you are listening to session number 6 of the Smart Brand Marketing Podcast. Dara Brustein is joining us today to explain how to properly organize a networking event, the do's and don'ts of attending one, and we will touch on the art of the follow-up. This is a weekly podcast, so if you haven't subscribed yet, do it now. I really want to get into this whole networking thing because it's not usual when I come across someone that's throwing events like you are for people under 40, right? That's what you're doing?
Yeah. That's right.
Do you need to separate it by age groups?
The reason that I decided to do under 40 is because I think that there's a lot of environments that cater to a general audience. And when you go to a lot of those events, like for example, at a chamber of commerce meeting or an industry association meeting, they tend to be an older audience in the first place. So, you know, when I came into the Atlanta professional business scene and wanted to get out and network for my company, I always felt like the child in the room. You know, I was in my mid-20s and I felt like everyone was my parents' age. I didn't feel that way. They were. And it's not that that is uncomfortable per se, but I do think there's something to be said for putting yourself in an environment with your peers so that you can grow together. And in my opinion, a large part of doing business is building a rapport with someone and building that liking of one another. And it's not to be said that that can't happen amongst an age range older than you significantly. That certainly is possible, and I've done it myself, but there's something to be said for, you know, networking side by side with your peers in an environment where people feel comfortable, because even if they're, let's say, new to their career or just out of college or new to a city, I think it's a little less intimidating, a little more welcoming to be able to have those types of conversations with people at a similar stage of life as you.
So you feel that 40 is a good separation point?
Yeah, I mean, 40 to some degree is arbitrary. But on the other hand, there's also a component that really is just where a lot of organizations make the distinction between young professional and a more seasoned or established professional. And that's not, again, to be said that you can't be an extremely established professional at 25 or 35. But it does seem to be that there's something about a shift in mindset and where people are in life in general around that mark of 40.
That makes sense. When did you start saying Atlanta instead of Atlanta?
I said it differently.
Yeah, you said when I moved to Atlanta. That's not what people say when they first move to Atlanta. That takes a while.
I don't even know. I've been here 12 years. I guess it's slowly creeped in.
Yeah, I noticed that. How big of a group is too big, do you think? Because I've went to a lot of these conferences where there's like 400 or 500 people and you can't meet everyone. There's just no way, even if you spoke to a different person each minute. How do you feel about that? How big?
Right. Well, I think the first point to make isn't about how big or how small. It's about the fact that I think as an event attendee, it's not important to go in wanting to meet everyone. It's important to go in wanting to meet a handful of people and have quality interactions. And in some cases, you'll go in with sort of a premeditated plan, if it's possible, depending on the event structure and what you're coming and looking for, to maybe know who those people are. And perhaps you'll introduce yourself to the event organizer and ask them to help make those introductions for you. Otherwise, it's more of a serendipity type mindset where you think, I'd just like to come to an event and meet a small handful of people and just see what organically comes of those interactions, which I genuinely think is a great way to look at it, because you never know who knows who, you never know how you can help someone or vice versa. And I think you'll ultimately get a lot more out of a few intentional interactions than trying to work an entire room. That being said, though, I do think size is important on both sides of the spectrum. Too small, I think, isn't great, because I think people feel too singled out and they don't feel like there's enough of a buffer to move from person to person, and it's a little less energy. It may not feel as exciting or energizing. Whereas on the other end, like you said, when you have several hundred people, that can be intimidating, even to the biggest extrovert. And it's tough to hope for any of those serendipitous moments. When there's that many people, it can be really hard. So I tend to like something in a range, depending on point of the group and their meeting and the location size, somewhere between about 75 and 200. I think that's a really nice size. With Atlanta Under 40, we typically are in about the 200 range, but throughout the years, we've gone through the spectrum to get there. And I think that people have found value at all those different sizes.
So let's say you're an organizer, you're listening to this right now, you have a group coming and it's like 400 or 500 people. What should you do?
I think you need to find ways to make it a little more intimate within that large group. So whether it designating on name badges some distinction amongst people. So, you know, if it's an investing group, who are the investors and who are the people with businesses looking for an investor, you know, somehow differentiate that. Or if it's a more generic industry, somehow differentiate by industry or whatever it takes to do that, so that at least there's some differentiation, or even give some sort of little activity they could do within the group to break it down and not feel like they're walking into a giant sea of people and not knowing how to really maneuver that.
So create smaller events within the larger event.
Right. I mean, not physically smaller, not actually break it out, but find ways to make it so that people feel like it's a little more intimate than it actually is.
Can you think of any ways? Because you're the organizer.
Right. Well, some of the ones I just mentioned. So like differentiating on name tags with different colors or stickers or something along those lines, so people know this person is this or does this. And it depends completely on your context. So like I said, if it's an event where you have investors coming to meet business owners looking for investment, then the investors could have red name tags and the business owners could have blue name tags. Or if it's a more general industry agnostic event, then you could say, you know, tech people have green name tags and people in education have blue name tags and people in finance have red name tags and so on and so forth. Or you can have placards around the room, like on little plastic stands that just have some icebreaker questions to help people that might feel a little intimidated or in a conversation rut say, oh, did you see that question? That's kind of funny. Like, what's the answer for you? Just to help them a little, because again, I think when you have that many people, it's really easy to get lost.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, in a lot of ways, that could be a little discriminating too. A girl's coming into an event. She's like, oh, I don't like tech guys. So she'll never talk to one because he's got a blue thing on his tag.
Yeah, again, it depends. Like at the under 40 events, I don't do any of that. The only thing that I do is I put a little star sticker on people's name tags when they come in, if they're new, if it's their first time, just so that people can identify them and be extra welcoming towards them. I do think that that's important, and that's sort of the opposite of the discrimination side. It's really, how do we reach out to you more and welcome you in a more effective way so that you don't get lost amongst the crowd? So that's one small way to do that.
What would you say the role of an organizer is when the event is actually going?
In my opinion, the role of the organizer is to be sort of like the party host. If you're having a dinner party, you're the person who should be moving around, setting the energy. You should be having a good time yourself because others will feed off of that. But I think it's important that you're meeting new people, that you're making connections for people, you're welcoming the people who have been in the past. I don't think the person who's running the event should be the person who's running registration at your door. That should be someone else. That's more of a logistical thing and something that isn't the best use of your time and energies. It's really ideal if you can be out in the crowd and connecting the people, perhaps the people you've met at past events, with people from that are new, or if someone says they have a need and you recognize someone else could fill that need or be a great resource for them, that you make that connection for them.
So what kind of a team would you need, the supportive team, to actually run something like you're doing 200 people, let's say? Who do you need underneath you doing what?
So it depends, I think, a lot on how often your events are happening and what your bandwidth looks like personally. But at the event itself, you definitely need 1 to 2 people running a registration for you at the door, and they just need a pretty basic training on what that takes. It's going to really depend on what your event's intentions and purposes are and what, you know, you're looking to grab from people when they get in. If you've had pre-registration, they'll be checking people off. If there's tickets to be purchased, they'll be selling those. If they have to register and log in information, however you're doing that, they'll be taking that information. They'll be helping them fill out name tags, perhaps dropping business cards to win prizes, things of that nature. It really depends on, you know, what the flow of your event looks like from a time frame perspective. perspective and numbers, how many people you'll need. My events are 3 hours long. Like any event you typically see, the majority of them come in right around 30 minutes to an hour into the event. And so it's great for us to have two people because our line moves really quickly. Most of our people pre-register, they get scanned on a barcode and they make a name tag and keep going. So it's pretty quick for us, but it'll depend on what your setup looks like and what your flow of people looks like. And then inside the event, again, it depends on your logistics. Mine are really straightforward. They're happy hour networking type events. So, you know, I have a photographer every month. Oftentimes I'll have a videographer. And then the venue is responsible for the food service and the drink service. And it's pretty straightforward.
Let's say someone has a smaller business and they want to throw an event to get people excited around it, but their following is really small. And I see that with a lot of businesses. What should they do? How should they go about doing something like you're doing?
I would recommend if they're looking to do a one-off event or something of that nature to promote what they're doing and they don't have a lot of people in their network, that they make some sort of alliances and partnerships with people who would tangentially relate to the type of audience they're trying to promote, and they can all work together to create something that's bigger and perhaps more exciting than they could do on their own. I'm personally not the biggest fan of an event that just promotes a brand strictly for the sake of promoting it, perhaps, you know, ultimately trying to get customers right out of that event. And I'm sure there's a lot of PR people and marketing people who would disagree. But I do think if there's not something that's a clear value to the participant outside of this brand's looking to get in front of me, then personally, as the consumer, that doesn't interest me. For a one-off event, I'd say align themselves with businesses that would have a similar audience they're looking to reach, and they can all benefit each other.
What if they did want to do ongoing events? How would you promote? Can you give a couple examples?
I mean, there's a lot of ways. Certainly, your network needs to be the foundation. You know, I started Under 40 in 2011. The first event had 94 people, 90 of whom I knew. And so it's always important that your network is the foundation. If you want to have one of those events and you don't have a network, it's probably best that you partner with someone who does, and maybe your skills and strengths are opposite of theirs. Maybe you're really great at the online marketing and newsletter creation and doing the social media promotions and maybe doing some of the logistical venue booking and things of that nature. And maybe they're great at getting the word out, more word, you know, word of mouth style, and getting their network to piggyback off of one another. And that's sort of the next step, is whomever's in your network, you need to incentivize them to get the word out to their friends. So for mine, for example, I create a host committee every month where I tap 3 to 5 people who are either MVPs in my event, they come regularly, they're excited about it, or they're people who just have a great network outside of the network that I already have. And I ask them to be a part of our host committee. It's really informal. All that it means is that they show up to the event. Before the event, they've promoted it to their friends and contacts. They get free entry. They get to bring a couple people for free. So they see it as a value and their friends see it as a value, and it gets the word out to a group of people that never would have heard about it before. So there's a lot of ways to do it at little or no cost and extend well beyond the network that you have.
Yeah, that pretty much answers that. Let's go into actually attending events now, because we spoke a lot about organizing and things like that. How should one prepare for a meetup or an event?
Again, it depends entirely on what your motivation is in attending. I think you need to show up with a good attitude, maybe bring some business cards so people know how to get back in touch with you, and just be prepared to have conversations and ask people about themselves. And I think ultimately the best way to approach any networking conversation and opportunity is to be more invested and interested in the other person than you are in your own agenda. And I think that that gets overlooked often, where people will go to a networking event and they will dominate a conversation. They'll shove a business card down your throat. They will jump right to what they're looking for, and the other person feels they've just been sold something, or they feel that they've just had sort of a tirade of a conversation, not a really get to know you mutual interested dialogue. So I think, you know, regardless of social or professional interests, that's important. If you have more professional interests, and let's say they're specific, let's say you're a job seeker or you're in business development, then if there's some way for you to identify either the types of people who are attending the event or the specific people who are attending the event beforehand, that's great. And when you get there, ask the people at the door, do you know who this person is? Is there some way that I could be introduced to them? And if that's not the case, either way, when you get there, introduce yourself to the event organizer or organizers and ask them, say, you know, this is who I am. This is how I came here. This is who I'm really looking to meet. Would you mind helping me do that? And I think that's a really great way to get yourself off on the right foot. But like I said before about serendipity, there's nothing wrong. And I think there's actually a lot of great things about going to an event where you think the general populace is going to fit what your goals are, whatever they may be, and just going and seeing what conversations you have and where those lead, and knowing knowing that that initial interaction is generally not going to be your lightning strikes and the exact thing that you need presents itself. Oftentimes it's in the follow-up and it's in the continually getting to know someone. So it's after that event, following up with them and setting up a phone conversation or going to grab coffee or lunch. And when you do that, really getting a little deeper and understanding how you can help one another or continuing to go to the same events regularly and making a name and a presence for yourself so that people are more coming to you. And in those cases, wanting to get to know, who is this person? This person's become a staple here. They seem trustworthy. How can I get to know them and help them in some way?
You actually answered some of the questions I was thinking of, which is great. And that's how to follow up and keep the connections growing strong. Because I think a lot of people forget that part. They'll go to an event, they'll meet someone, they'll hand off a business card, and then not follow up again. And that connection just dies.
Right. In my opinion, that was a waste of your evening. If you're unwilling to go to an event and intend to follow up with most or all of the people that you met, even if it's as simple as an email saying, it was really great to meet you, hope to see you at the next event, because you didn't feel that there was genuine reason why you need to do a more in-depth follow-up, then that's all that it needs to be. Or, you know, send them a LinkedIn invitation to say, it was great to meet you. That should be at the minimum. On the other side, it should be more likely, like I mentioned earlier, that you met someone, you felt like, oh, maybe this person was interesting, maybe we should follow up, or maybe there was something specific you discussed that you actually wanted to follow up on. And you say, hey, why don't we schedule a call? Why don't we have an in-person meeting? Those are the best, because then you get time where you're not being distracted. There's not a lot of people milling around. You're not being interrupted by people joining your conversation. And that's when you really go into more depth. And it's in those meetings where you really determine, is this someone that I really want to keep in my close network? Or is it someone that's great to know and see at networking events? Or you kind of make that determination at that point as to whether or not that's someone that you want to continue to hold close in your network, or if they're just someone that you might run into or keep on your LinkedIn contact.
So would you create a calendar? Would you think, I need to contact each person once or twice a month? How would you schedule that?
Again, it depends on the quality, in your opinion, of the contact. So after I have one-on-one meetings with new contacts, if I think it's someone I want to keep in touch with regularly, I'll actually put a calendar reminder in on a monthly rotation. It's sort of what I call like a reconnect file. And I'll put their contact information, some of the notes, and it'll come up color-coded on my calendar every month as a, you know, reach out to this person. And I may not reach out to them every single month, but when there's something that's relevant or someone that comes to my mind as, oh, so-and-so and this person should connect, it's a really great way to keep them top of mind and to make sure that that isn't a contact that dies. There's also softwares and companies who help you manage these things, a little bit different way of doing it, and in some senses ranking the quality of your connections with them. But again, it depends entirely on you, what works for your style, what your goals are. And all that to be said, I think a lot of people say, I don't need to network. And I hope I'm not jumping too far ahead in your questions, but I think at the bottom line, everyone needs to network all the time. And whether you're doing it at an event or it's just what's organically happening in your life, you are networking and you're constantly building relationships and cultivating them to some degree or another. And it's at the times when people think, well, now is when I need to network because I need a job, or suddenly I found myself in a sales role, or I'm buying a house and suddenly I need someone to refer me to a realtor and a handyman and all the other things that come along with that. And they think, well, now let me tap into my network. Those are the worst times to begin to cultivate and develop a network. It's that you need to be doing it at times when you don't need it, so that when you actually need something, your network is there for you and they don't feel like you're taking advantage of them. So I say all that to say, when whatever your networking goals are, that should, in my opinion, always be underpinned with the concept that networking is critical at all times, regardless of whether or not you think you quote unquote need to network.
Yeah, it's like people that only listen to positive thinking tapes when something went really bad.
Right,
when
right.
Things are feeling good, they're just like, oh, forget this stuff. So that makes sense. Can you recommend any of that software that you mentioned?
Yeah, you and I both know this one, Relately, relate.ly. That's one that I've used and I've recommended to the Under 40 Network because it's really inexpensive and it's really simple. And for someone who doesn't have a gigantic network with whom they're trying to keep up regularly, it's a really great way to rank and get daily reminders of what it is that, or whom it is that you're looking to reconnect, and let it track it for you so you don't feel overwhelmed by it.
Gotcha. Now, you did mention people coming in, giving off business cards and pretty much trying to sell someone. And I see a lot of that at the smaller meetups. Give us some of the to-dos and not to-dos,
yeah.
Some of the worst ones you've seen or the best ones you've seen when someone comes to an event. Like, how should you act? How should you not act? I just want to give some really extreme examples so people don't do them.
Well, let's start with the not to-dos because I think those are a lot more glaring. When you come to an event, I think the worst thing you can do is have a stack of business cards in your hand and interject yourself into people's existing conversations. Put your hand out and say, I'm so-and-so, this is what I do, here's my card, great to meet you, to the next person, to the next person, to the next person. Because in my opinion and in my experience, those cards are just going to end up in a trash can. You know, you've not only not made a good impression, but if I'm your audience, you've really turned me off because I feel that you have no care or concern for who I am, for general public graces that I was in the middle of a conversation, and that you just shoved a business card in my face as if I cared because we've developed no rapport and I haven't asked you for that business card. I think the best thing to do is to walk into an event, perhaps find someone who's not talking to anyone or a couple people who seem like they're in a casual dialogue and walk up next to them and just say hello, let them welcome you into the conversation, naturally ease in depending on where they are in the course of that conversation, and then start by asking them questions. I think it's always most important to get to know the other people, especially because if they do ask you about yourself, it's a lot easier to know how to cater who you are or what it is you share with them based on what you know of them and make it something that might be a little more interesting to them, or perhaps ask questions that are a little bit more interesting than, hi, what do you do? Maybe, you know, what brought you to the event tonight? How long have you been coming? What do you love about our city? What are you looking to get out of this evening? Just start to warm it up a little bit more than just, how's the weather? What do you do? And where do you live, as an example? And then, in my opinion, I don't think that you hand a business card to someone unless they ask for it. So there's many times someone will hand me a business card and I will not hand them one back. I won't hand one back until they ask me for one. There's no need in just handing someone a card unless they really want it.
Yeah, I usually forget my business cards.
Well, I think having them is important. It's tough for people to follow up with you. If you don't have them, it's not the most ideal to pull out a cell phone and take notes and write it all down. It's usually pretty loud in a networking event. So definitely bring the business cards.
Tell people where they can find you, where they can follow you if they would like to find out more about you.
They can follow my events. It is networkunder40.com, and it's 40, the number. We're also on Twitter at AtlantaUnder40, same 40. And then I'm on Twitter at Dara B, DarrahB, like boy.
Okay, we're done. Thank you for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed it, please help out by leaving a review in iTunes, and don't forget to hit the subscribe button. If you have any questions, hit me up in the comments on smartbrandmarketing.com. Until next time.
Thanks for listening to the Smart Brand Marketing Podcast with Tom, the Digital Architect, Liebel. For more tips, tricks, and interviews, come visit smartbrandmarketing.com. That's smartbrandmarketing.com. And join the newsletter. It's free.